It's us again. The guys who love you, you get the blessing. Bob Belts, Bo Mitchell. Morning, Bob.
Good morning, and a little bit of U2, Bono in the background to help everybody get out of bed this morning.
Wake up, folks. Stay tuned right here. It's good music. One of the finest shows in America. Because you get to meet guests, listen to great music.
There we go. Magnificent. You know, our guest picked this song this morning. He knew that we're going to play a song, so he came in prepared with this song.
Showed his genius early by picking
exactly.
This song.
Exactly. And leadership.
We do welcome y'all to our program again today. You get the blessing, and you get blessed by listening to the show in a number of ways. But each week, we try to introduce you to a special guest that's doing a lot of good in the community. And we also expose you to who I humbly consider the best Bible expositor in American history, my partner, Bob Belts. He's the best. So it's like just sitting next to a commentary here. I can ask him anything. It's going to come out perfect. Bob, I don't say that.
No, usually I get a look like a deer in the headlights when you ask me a question.
But No, you always come through. So all we're trying to say is, folks, it's not as complicated as it looks. There's a reason people like to read Sports Illustrated, the business section, watch CNN, rather than study the Bible, where people are a little afraid of it or something. It's not that complicated. If I can get it, you can get it. And Bob helps us all get it each week. So we'll do some of that. We'll talk a little about Highline Community Church, where Bob preaches every Sunday morning at 10 o'clock, Sunday school 9 o'clock, and right off the corner of Arapahoe and University. Things are going well over at Highline?
Things are going great. Great group of people. And again, it's always fun when someone that's been listening to the show comes and says, hey, I heard your show this morning and decided to come because we want to welcome all of our listeners.
You don't have to go to our church. Just go to some church. Yeah. Or go to your neighbor's house who can maybe point you to some truth and help you get off of
Of course, what I say is, why wouldn't you go to our church? No, I'm just kidding.
That's a good thing to say.
All right.
I agree.
Let's get on with things.
Introduce our guest, friend.
Well, you know, it's a real treat today to have a good friend of mine on the show and in my opinion, one of the great young leaders in America today. And Trevor Braun is, we've known each other, gosh, I don't know, 8 or 10 years now, I think. It's been a while. But anyway, Trevor, great to have you with us this morning.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet. And I'm really going to just kind of turn it over to you for a couple of minutes and say, why don't you tell the folks that are listening this morning a little bit about your background, what life was like growing up for you, and maybe a little bit about when Christ became real in your life.
Well, that's a long story.
Yeah. I mean, and you've got like 5 minutes to do
Sweet.
That. No.
The condensed Reader's Digest version of the life of Trevor Braun. I am one of, I think, the only 12 native Coloradans left. So, and I think 4 of them are related to me. So I've lived here my whole life, and it's been a phenomenal experience. I've had lots of opportunities to go someplace else, but I've been to those other places, and there's no place like this. So,
Amen. We agree.
That's right. And so, my childhood was, fortunately, was probably not very atypical. My parents were divorced when I was young. My dad was an alcoholic and eventually drank himself to death when I was 12. Mm. And so growing up was fairly tumultuous. My mom, for much of my childhood, worked multiple jobs just to kind of help us to survive. And in the midst of all of that, she took on the vital role of being the spiritual leader of our home and doing the best that she could, raising 3 kids on her own. And one summer evening, I remember it clear as day, we were in the living room of this little townhome that we lived in, and she shared what it meant to have a relationship with Christ. I was 9 years old. And I remember at that moment having no doubts that what she was telling me was the truth, and kind of jumped in with both feet. Now, we didn't attend church. Even though that wasn't all that long ago, church was a pretty scary place for a single mom. Mm. And unfortunately, going to church, oftentimes you kind of felt like the wicked stepchild because your family wasn't, it didn't appear to be perfect like everyone else's at church did. So we didn't really start attending church until I was probably maybe in middle school. And then even at that, we would drive a long way. We drove 45 minutes to go to church. And so I didn't do Sunday school. I didn't do youth group. We just went to worship service, and that was pretty much it. And when I was in high school, despite the fact that I had my life all planned out and knew exactly what I wanted to do, and I've blown that by now, by the way, because I was supposed to run for president this last go around. that was my plan.
Well,
there's still time.
Yeah, yeah. We need a new president here. So
you weren't going to say that.
No.
And so even though I had my life all planned out, really it was in high school that I really felt that God was calling me to do something else. And so I went away to college, and at that point, kind of had my world turned upside down. I went to CU to begin with. I spent only a semester there because God just really rocked my world. I left there, and I ended up at Colorado Christian University, which was where I graduated from. And I stuck with having a degree in political science, but I really knew that God wanted me to be a pastor. But I was really afraid of what the guys who were being pastors looked like. They all were wearing ties and carrying briefcases. And
you see, you hadn't met me yet. That was the deal. So.
I hadn't met any cool ones yet, Bob. That's right. So that's kind of the Reader's Digest version, yeah. And since then I've done a lot of different things, and it's been a pretty magnificent ride.
Well, we'll get into some of that. I was going to say, I have the pleasure of knowing your mom, and she is a quality human being and did a great job raising you, but...
So, I had the pleasure of going to CU for 4 years, and I've been to CCU. That was culture shock for you, going from Boulder to this campus.
It was, yeah. I when I was taking classes within my major, there were 9 political science majors at CCU at the time. When I was taking classes within the major at CU, there were like 800 people. So I loved it. It was a great place to go, and I still only live probably a half mile from there. So
yeah. I was referring more to the fact the 9 at CCU were probably – a lot more in touch with where you were heading in the 800 at CU.
They were, definitely. But it was even a culture shock for me because I hadn't been around, you know, what I call cultural Christianity. I didn't know there was a little cultural Christian enclave. I didn't know that there were Christian bookstores and Christian recording artists, and I didn't know any of that. And quickly learned out, actually, my first semester at CCU that I had a pretty foul mouth. which I didn't know until you're in an environment where no one has mouth except
you
for
probably
me.
Were saying darn and stuff, you know, because CCU, yeah. You can't say
exactly.
That.
I actually was at CU in the 60s before sex or drugs had even arrived on the campus.
Actually, it just, Bo didn't know they had arrived on the campus.
I didn't. They didn't have them over at Balch Fieldhouse. And Sox Walseth, our coach, wouldn't have liked it anyway.
Anyway. Well, listen, let's move a little bit forward in your story, because I think one of, I would guess that as you look back on your life and the, you know, the opportunities you've had and some of the ways in which God's used your life, I think, tell us a little bit about kind of the period of time that led up and to the beginning of TNL.
When I graduated from CCU, 3 months after I graduated, so I think I had just turned 21 years old, I started a college ministry. At the church I had interned at while I was in college. We did that predominantly because, like so many churches in America, there's a missing age group. And unfortunately, we're duplicating this and perpetuating the missing generation, where between roughly 18 and 30, they're just not going to church. And so we started a college ministry trying to be really intentional to create a place where people could have dynamic relationships, where they could engage in worship like they had never experienced before, and where they could hear the teaching of the word in a way that would just totally blow them away. So we started that college ministry. Our very first Tuesday night, we had 50 people. It was the most horrendously bad thing that anyone has ever experienced. It was so bad, I wanted to leave. And
what made it bad?
Oh, it was, I don't know. It was just bad. The music was bad. The environment, it was just all bad. And so
you had them circled up singing Jesus Loves Me or something?
We might as well have just gone into, you know, Kumbaya and I don't know. It was, whatever it was bad. So, I went home and curled up in the fetal position, but I was committed to doing it the next week again. And the next week we had 10 more than we had the first week, and I was so excited. But then when I stood up and looked out at the crowd, I realized they were 60 completely new people because we had totally, you know, burnt out the first 50. And but I was thankful for that. And so that college ministry, you know, grew and became a young adult ministry. And I did that for about 3 years, and then just really felt that God was telling me that young adult ministry was supposed to become a church on its own. So 3.5, 4 years after we started, we did a church plant with that group of people, which was, in my opinion, was just a great way to do a church plant because we church planted with 800 people, where the average age was like 22 years old. So we had no idea what we were doing, but we were having fun. So we did a church plant and could have not planned or programmed or orchestrated what that church would be like. And we just saw absolutely amazing things. Hundreds of people come to know Christ. The average age was still only about 25 or 26 years old. I think I was probably 20. I was 26 or 27 at the time. And, you know, we just saw remarkable things. It was just such an amazing honor to be able to get up and to teach God's word. And it was almost like you could just see the light go on. You could see people get it. Hmm. And you could watch their lives literally change right before your very eyes. And it was such an amazing journey.
What did you do to make the place so comfortable where people could come and be open to the truth of the scripture?
You know, I think that a lot of it has to do with creating an environment where you're just not trying to convince people that you've got it all together. And I certainly don't. I never have. And the older I get, the more I realize I never will. So, you know, for me, my teaching style is very much I teach out of my gut. I'm a fairly emotive teacher in my style. And I think that people resonate with that at a very deep level.
Don't feel judged. Don't feel pushed.
Nope, not at all. But also, you know, being able to, I think one of the biggest downfalls that we have is we stand up every week and in churches all over the place and we teach the word. And our assumption really is, oh, well, people have heard this before. And my approach is always, I'm going to teach this in a way that they go, I've never heard that before.
Yeah.
I just want people to experience it for the wild ride that it is. I think it was Annie Lamont who said we really ought to all go to church with wearing a crash helmet because it should be that kind of a wild ride where you just go, that is just amazing. And I still to this very day I taught 2 weeks ago, I taught the 23rd Psalm because it occurred to me I had never taught the 23rd Psalm. And so I taught the 23rd Psalm. Now, I don't know if the people who heard it got as much of a kick out of it as I did, but I had a blast. And I learned things that were just amazing to me.
That's the way Bob and I approach life. If we like our own stuff, it works for us and somebody else. But
that's right. I think if I don't like my own stuff, then I'm pretty sure no one else will. So, I have a good time doing it.
I do think everyone in the world eventually gets to a point where they're looking for someplace comfortable where they can get life-changing information. And eventually we all get sick of the minutia that's thrown at us, and people listening to us today might want to follow up on what we're saying and find that spot where you're comfortable. And you got guys like Trevor and Bob unpacking the Word of God in a way that's comfortable for you.
I used to go over periodically and visit you guys and TNL, and you really did. You created a great environment. I mean, the music was music that connected, with the people that were there, and you always did a great job. I know that you went through a really difficult time after that. I don't know how much of that you want to share transitioning into a little bit of what you're doing now, but, you had tremendous success and at a very young age, and you're a great communicator, great leader, and then you kind of hit a tough spot because you and I have shared times together as you were going through that. You want to share any of that? It's up to you.
You're actually being kind. A tough spot is that's like an understatement.
Okay, car wreck.
Yeah. it felt like actually a whole highway wreck. I mean, was I was 28 years old by that time. The Next Level Church had grown to over 3,000 people, and I was internally the more, from a worldly perspective, the more successful it became, the worse I felt, and internally, the more trouble I was in. Up until that point in my adult life, certainly I had learned that it was a whole lot easier just to figure out what people wanted you to be and just be that. And you can't do that for a long period of time, but I didn't know that then. And so the longer I went along doing that, the more trapped and the more scared I became. And so my thought at that point in time in my life was, if I just would work harder, if I would just pray more, if I would fast, if I would do all of these things that were, I was looking for the magical solution. And there wasn't a magical solution to it. And so I had some amazing people in my life who I confided in. And I, for the first time in my life, I just said, I've got to start talking to people and telling them what's happening in me internally. Mm-hmm. I didn't have any friends. I could be in a room full of people and feel totally alone. I would go home at night and I would dread it because there wasn't anything there. So it was a very kind of lonely time for me. Ironically, it was probably some of the best teaching times I ever had, though, because I was teaching the things that I so desperately needed to experience and hear myself. And so, you know, I would teach, you know, probably every week, if not every other week, I'd teach about grace. Because I so desperately wanted to experience it.
Yeah.
And since then, what I've come to realize is that grace is inherited. You can't get it from people who haven't gotten it. But when you come across people who have gotten it, they are the best people in the world. So I left ministry, and my life was in a heap.
And that was, what year would that have been?
That was in like 2000. It was about 8 or 9 years
yeah.
ago.
Okay.
I spent the first year literally not doing anything. I didn't have a job. I went to counseling. I went to group therapy. I met with my group of pastors that had come around me. And I, still to this day, I don't know who or how, but there were a group of people who literally paid for me to live. They made my mortgage payment. They made my car payment. I'd never had any need during that year. They paid for my counseling. I don't know who they are. I don't even know where they gave the money to. I just know that it would happen. It would just show up.
Now, there could be listeners looking for a job like that.
So yeah.
Folks, yeah. He had people whose lives he touched.
Yeah, you had touched a lot of people's lives, and, you know.
That's who they were, Trevor.
They loved you. Anyway.
So, you know, so after about a year, I just got, if you've ever been to counseling, you know that I think almost everybody hits this point where I just got tired of talking about myself. I was so sick of myself, I just wanted to throw up. So I was like, I got to do something other than that. So I went to work doing construction. I just got my modeling of the life of Jesus just backwards. So he did the construction thing and went into teaching, and I went from teaching into construction. And I did that for a couple years. I didn't know anything about construction, but I worked for a great guy who taught me pretty much everything he knew. And
you know, you actually did a project on my house, and that's when I discovered you didn't know anything about construction.
That's true. And actually, I sent the crew to your house.
Just kidding.
Because I'd hurt my back so bad I couldn't even bend over, so I couldn't do any of the work.
They did
your
a good
house.
Job.
But
I should say, by the way, you're listening to the voice of Trevor Brown, our special guest today, and Bob Belts, my co-host here on You Get the Blessing. So. Keep going, Trevor.
Yep. All right. So, like any good entrepreneur, I suppose, after I had done that for a couple of years, I just got it in my head that I could do it on my own. So I started my own construction company. And I did that for a number of years until I just really felt this deep kind of burden within me that I needed to go back to doing some things that mattered more than what the bathroom or the kitchen in someone's house looked like. So I sold the company and turn to what was next. And so for the last number of years, I've done two things. I did church consulting for quite a while. I got to travel around and meet with some phenomenal church leaders and help churches that were in crisis and leaders that were in crisis. And then that led me to where I am now, where I work for an organization called Monvi.
Okay. Now, before we get into that, for guys that are listening, because really there's, you know, I mean, you've been on a journey that a lot of people listening today are somewhere along. And, you know, so you kind of went from the top of the mountain really into pretty deep valley there for a period of time. But, you know, slowly God restored you and you went through that process. It's really great that kind of out of that process is coming the new season in your life, really. And, you know, anything to say about if you look back kind of where – what that process brought you to that now has enabled you to do what you're doing now?
Yeah. you know, probably the biggest thing, and I alluded to it earlier, the biggest thing was I didn't expect that when I left, I would go through as big of an identity crisis as I went through. Because so much, whether you're in ministry full time or in corporate America or whatever, we spend so much time becoming our jobs. We take that on as though that's our identity. And that's exactly what I had done. And to come to a place where I am now where, you know, what I do for a living really is inconsequential. It has little or nothing to do with my identity. And so coming to a real healthy place of knowing my identity and knowing what that's about and realizing that had I gone through all that I went through and never experienced what real, honest, authentic, genuine community was about, I wouldn't have survived. Had it not been for people who really understood what that was like and just tenaciously pursued me, even when I didn't want to be. I had people who would just get in my face and say, you know, you may not want me to be here, but I'm going to be your friend whether you want me to be or not. And finally,
that's kind of what I did with Bo, by the way, because
let's don't go into that.
Yeah,
story.
We won't go into that story.
No. I heard anyway. It said okay. by a counselor to me that just because what you're doing may not be working out, who you are can be working out. And it sounds like you were not working out in the sense of exercising, but no. You were working out and growing into everything God intended for you to be.
Yep. Yeah.
So let's go and tell us a little bit about Monvi and anything that, you know, might be helpful to the listeners and how they can find out about that. And
sure.
Anyway.
Monvi is, it's been such a cool experience for me. I've been doing this for about a year. Monvi is a web-based discipleship tool that takes into account 34 different aspects of your character qualities and walks you through a very short kind of intuitive assessment process. And then once you've done that, we'll help you create a roadmap for spiritual growth. And there isn't anything like it in the world. It is the best blending of technology and kind of old school kind of discipleship blended together. And the philosophy really that we have is that everyone has what it takes to grow, but everyone has something that gets in the way. And so if we can help identify what that something is that's getting in the way, we call it your primary spiritual inhibitor. And if we can help you find out what that is, then you're 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 steps farther down the road at knowing, okay, now that I know what my primary spiritual inhibitor is, I can begin addressing some of those things. And so the tool is designed and functions best within the context of the local church because we believe that community is the way that that happens. And the tool is relatively new. There are a couple hundred churches all over the United States that are using it. And I get to work with a phenomenal group of people that when a church says, yeah, we want to use this tool, then I oversee that group of people that helps churches do implementation. So I got to work with churches and church leaders. And really the goal is ultimately the tool is inconsequential. The goal is to help people be growing spiritually. And what does that look like and how do we do that?
So Albert Einstein said the solution to the problem is identifying the problem. So primary spiritual inhibitor, you're saying your whole process allows people to say in a constructive, educated, intelligent, yet emotional package, hey, that's, let me put my finger on that. There's the problem that's stunting my growth.
Yep.
So that's sort of simple yet brilliant in its
process. The process of identifying that was really quite fascinating. You just take all of the sins that are listed in the New Testament and you list them all out. And then you say, okay, can we group these together into some major categories? And we did. And there are 9 of them. There are essentially 9 primary spiritual inhibitors that people have.
Pride, so you don't think I would have like 4 or 5 primary spiritual
inhibitors? Well, you could. And you might throw the whole system out of whack.
You need really to go know, through but the system 3 or 4 times just to identify those. So
I think that's exciting because some people don't want to take the time to say, okay, what's stunting me here? How come I can't just take off?
One of the great things is then when you find out what your spiritual inhibitor is, we can pair you to a biblical character that has that same spiritual inhibitor. So you can, you know, not feel so alone in it. And you say, oh, well, you know, if Abraham struggled with this, I think I can probably make it through. Or
and you David just hope or... you aren't like Balaam's ass, you know.
I'm sure I would be.
Okay, well, tell people, is there a way that, you know, listeners can get a little bit more information?
Sure.
And if they, what if they wanted to, you know, go through the process? What? How they do that?
Well, because it's a web-based discipleship tool, obviously the best way to do that is to go to the website, monvee.com, M-O-N-V-E-E.com, monvee.com. People ask all the time, what does monvee mean? It's a loose translation for the Latin one life. So we just turned it into a good English word. And
yeah.
So monvee.com, tons of information on what the tool is about and how to get involved and all that stuff.
Not that big a deal, folks. Just... Look it up, monvee.com. Have your life completely changed for the good. That's it. That's all right. Trevor has to offer this.
Well, we're going to get Trevor out at Highline again, but any place that you're teaching right now that people could, you know, come and...
I teach at two places on a fairly regular basis, Westwoods Community Church in Lakewood and the church at Parker in Parker. And
great.
I'll be at, like Bob said, I'll be at Highline.
Trevor, you're great. Thanks for doing what you're doing and struggling through that stuff like everybody else does and coming out where you are now.
We never even got into the size of Trevor's arms, by the way, but that's a whole nother show.
Well, we got before and after pictures coming that we'll put on our website.
Yeah, they'll be on the website.
YouGetTheBlessing.com, by the way. You can hear all these programs again if you'd like to.
Great.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks, Trevor. We'll see you all again next week. Thanks for tuning in.
See you both.